I'm going to invite my bride, Pastor Kim, to come up. And I want to share a scripture with you. Then I'm going to invite our guests up. We're going to have a conversation, not an interview. They said that's an old word, Jamie. We're going to use conversation. So we're going to have a conversation with some special guests this morning. But we want to kind of help you see what our strategy has been for our entire ministry on how do we staff this church? How do we raise up leaders? Now, this can apply to you as an individual in your own job and your own workplace. It can apply to you in this church. We've never hired any staff pastor, staff leader from outside of this church in the 27 years we've been here and the 46 years in ministry. We've never hired, that's not true, we did hire one outside back on Sanibel, and he turned out to be a disaster. Anyway, Charles, you'll remember him, yeah. One of my leaders back then said, are you going to get some references on him? I'm like, what's a reference? It was your grandfather, Asher. He said, are you going to get some references? I'm like, what for? He said, he was pastoring at another church. Well, he blew that church up and the one before that he blew up and tried to blow ours up. So I learned that, so I don't need resumes. I want homegrown leaders, so we grow them all at home here. So that's our resume. That's how the Apostle Paul, I'm not acting like we're better than other churches. It's just a different philosophy. So the Apostle Paul said to a young man that he had raised up as a son in the book of Acts named Timothy. About 13 years later, he's writing to Timothy. He's now leading a church. He never dreamed he would. He has a timid personality. He was a reluctant leader, which are the best kind. And so in 2 Timothy 2, verse 1 and 2, you then, my son, we'll come back to that, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. The things you've heard me say. Now this morning it's going to be a we, Kim and I. So I want you to count the generations, see who can get them. The things that you have heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, and trust to reliable men who will also be qualified to teach others. Let me see a hand. How many generations can you count in this? Who's got it? It's not rocket science. Some hands should be up. There's not a secret here. Okay, what do you think? Okay. Nope. Got to have a first generation. Who's the first generation? Paul. Okay. Who's the second generation? Timothy. Who's the third generation? Reliable people. Oh, the fourth generation is others. So that would make Paul a great grandfather to the others. And that's our vision as a church and leaders. We're going to bring up our lead team, pastoral, but under them is a whole nother level of pastors. And then under them is a whole nother level of staff. And then under them is a whole nother level of volunteers. And so we have a deep bench. And so, but this is what we refer to as our lead team. So I'm going to invite Pastor Charles, Pastor Kelly, and Pastor Jason. You can give them a hand. You've seen her all morning. You know, Paul emphasized that word son, and, you know, we're not, I've got a bad joke, but anyway, a dad joke, but dad joke, it was Kentucky related, but anyway, we won't go there. You are from Kentucky, weren't you? Partially.
I want to hear the joke.
No. I paid for telling that the last time I told it. I offended 5 different people in one Sunday, and they were all in the same group. It was a miracle. It was a mere, if I sat out and said, I'm going to offend 5 of them and one, like, it was like bowling. It was just like crash, except the last thing you wanted was people having lunch about being offended by the pastor. Anyway, that was one of them, and I won't give
it. So don't tell the joke.
No,
all right.
Don't tell the joke. And don't say hallelujah in a Minnesotan accent or a Chinese accent. So anyway, got in trouble for that too.
We're going downhill already.
We're slipping. It's slipping. Okay. So here's the deal. Every one of them. Kelly's obviously been with us since birth. But our theme this morning is growing up Vineyard. And what does it mean to grow up Vineyard?
Well, I just want to start off by asking each one of you, we can start with Kelly and Charles and Jason, and maybe just give a one or two words of how you would describe what it's meant to you growing up, Vineyard.
I'll go first. My word would probably be redemptive. I spent, as they said, growing up, I was born into, these are my parents if you're new and you don't know. So.
And we were against everything.
Literally everything.
She couldn't go to her first dance was what? So we won't go down that road.
My first dance, we'll say, my first dance was prom because by then, as a senior, I was finally allowed to go to one.
They couldn't celebrate Halloween. We could go down the bad parenting road, but we won't. Because it turned out okay. Come on. That's all we need to know.
It's a different
we did everything
service.
Right.
We found the vineyard. Yeah.
No, but I went off on my own path for many years and went down some dark things. And when I came back around to the vineyard, I knew God welcomed me back, and I was, you know, welcome in the family and at home at church, but I also thought that he took the gift that he had given me of singing and worshiping away. So took many years to get to that point where I realized that he had restored all of me, and it wasn't just, you know, me being here in person, but he still wanted me to use my callings that he had given me. So through that, just growing in those things here, so... redemption.
So go ahead.
And as you found grace from God, because you went on a long journey of not being in the things of the Lord, but as you found his grace and his redemptive heart for you, how has that affected you as you're leading other people in the church?
I'd say that's probably my biggest heart, is to help and see other people who have been in similar situations or going through those kind of things. Just to be a model of that, and how his goodness never leaves you, and it comes running after you, and he will continue to pursue you, and just be a witness of that. And
not always easy. Mm-hmm. Redemption isn't just a magic wand you wave over people and say it's all going to be good. It involves hard conversations sometimes. Mm-hmm. It involves behaviors that are unhealthy that need to be changed. It involves therapy sometimes, addiction recovery sometimes, marital counseling sometimes. You know, redemption is not a magic bullet. Jesus doesn't just come in and go, whoop, okay, I'm all good. But if you don't have an atmosphere of loving, accepting, forgiving, encouraging, then her redemption, this church we originally pastored in the early days would have not allowed her into the worship. They would have held against her. And almost in a punitive way. And so we've learned in the vineyard that mercy triumphs over judgment. So, amen. Pastor Charles.
Well, I just went ahead.
Charles grew up, since he was 14, he grew up with all our daughters. He's only 24 now, so.
You got that right. Yeah, good.
But he's lived with us in our home. He's antagonized our daughters. He's been a brother.
Totally unprovoked, yeah. By the way.
Yeah. And both he and Jason have truly been, we've never had sons. We have good son-in-law, some great grandsons, but these are spiritual sons to Kim and I. So not to, go ahead, buddy, I'm sorry.
I just want to add to your, because when you came back and did worship, I led worship with you for the first time. I think you all were out. So I had to, but I got to see you lead worship after. And we grew up in the church singing specials in the Baptist church. So, but to see her come in, and she's been a big inspiration for me to keep me engaged in worship. And so she leads upwards to me, you know. And but I oversee our family ministry. That's at elementary, middle school, high school. I also oversee our food truck, which we just talked a little bit about there. But I think for a word for me, growing up in the vineyard, for me would be significance. Not having a great family life, moving here from the other coast right when I was 14 years old. My first weekend here, my buddy on the school bus went to the youth group. He invited me to youth group. He since has been gone, but I found through his invite, I found my family. And I didn't know at the time that that journey of significance for me and what it would mean in my life. I only knew that I liked the church, this church. I liked the people that there. They fed me. They seemed to, you know, they were kind to me and stuff. But if I had to go back and see in that moment of me being 14 years old, I didn't know I would be 59 sitting on a stage talking about all of these things and having been on staff for almost 30 years now here at the church. But in that moment, the Lord knew the significance of him placing me in this church, that what that would do, because I've been able to lead, man, I'm going to say maybe 1,000 kids to Jesus over those 30 years.
Yeah.
And many, having other opportunities to travel, and I mean, I got to meet the ambassador of Zimbabwe, like I'm just some dropout meat cutter, and
I almost killed multiple times in his youth because he was working for me in his, I don't know how old we're.
There's no time for these stories. So, it's like,
there's always time.
I didn't know how to pastor an ADD person, you know, or ADHD, whatever it is, whatever the initials
capital
were.
Capital A.
So I sat down with him one day and I got out a legal pad and I said, buddy, this is called a to-do list. Okay, I want you to write out the things that you need to do. We wrote them on the list. Okay, now I want you to work your list today. This is your agenda. This is your plan. I walked out feeling like an amazing leader. I sat down on my desk. It wasn't 5 minutes later. Out of the corner of my eye, his car goes, whoosh, gone. He's gone. Now, there was no cell phones back then to call him and say, where are you going? That's not on the list. To leave it. Something popped in his head that was more exciting than doing that to-do list, and he was gone.
I'm thinking of something right now. So,
but we discovered you could try to make him administrative and kill him, or you could get someone that can help him administrative. He's a genius. He's a creative genius.
We call him the Renaissance man. It's just so many multiple gifts that he has in creativity and passion and the Lord. So that was when we learned that everybody has their unique individual gifts. And so you work with what they have and put around them what they need.
We call him third and long. If you know sports, third down, long, you put your best player in. And we put him in when we got to get a first down. And it doesn't matter what area. We may inject him in here, put him there, put him there. And that's the genius of this team. You'll learn part of being faithful is willing to be flexible and if you're at work and your boss wants you to do something and you don't like doing it, you're not going to work long for that guy. You do what you're told to do and do it with all your heart, and he'll watch that, and they're not stupid. They're going to know that's not what you really like to do, but they're going to watch you willing to do what you don't want to do for the betterment of the team. And that's what Paul said, entrust to reliable people. Charles has discipled hundreds and hundreds after him. All right, go ahead, Pastor Jason.
Words I would pick to describe here, I'd say life-giving. I started coming here at 16. And had all.
How old are you now?
37.
Does he look 30? How many of you think he looks 37? No. How many think he looks 18? Come on. Yeah.
It has been quite a while since I've gotten you do that so good for your age kind of comment, though. So
well, let me
I
say
have
this.
Lost it.
We have applied one of the principles that Paul told Timothy. He said, don't let people look down on you because of your youth. We've trained people over the years, leaders, elders, older people. Not everybody could do it. Not everybody has the maturity to respect immaturity that's in growth. You have to. If you're going to be a parent, remember Paul called Timothy a son? You know how many people have said to me, we'd love a Jason. Can we have him? Like, you want to lose your right arm and left arm and both eyes? Try to come after him.
Or Charles or Kelly.
They're all like, we wish we had some. And I'm like, we saw them when they were teenagers.
And we made the investments.
Yeah, and which, AKA, what is that? Investment equals patience and white gray hair and tears. And it's messy, but we saw them before anybody could see them. And Kim has been like a champion for all, obviously her daughter, She loves Charles and Jason like sons, but she has championed Jason when others wanted to give up on him. And she saw in him things other people didn't see.
And that we have 140 years of ministry together between us.
Not all at one time.
Not at one time. But if you total,
that would make us
geriatric
times whatever.
But that's that investment that we have history with each other. That if we put those together, and that doesn't come cheap. There's been great costs.
I went off on Charles. I went off on Charles one time. I'd had too much coffee con leche. My head spun around on my shoulders. Green soup came out, and my dad came out of my mouth as a general contractor, which isn't a good thing. I'm a pastor, and I chewed him up one end down the
other.
It's
the God card. Never
anyway,
throw the God card.
It doesn't matter what the story was. It was wrong, and I had to go and up like I did to my own daughters. I had to go apologize and repent. Wasn't the first time. Probably won't be the last time. All right, go ahead, Jason. With that setup. Not that he hadn't been on the other end of some of those conversations.
Life-giving, thank you. Yeah, so it's been life-giving. Starting at 16 and had all of my own dreams and visions for my life, but being here, I've been able to find that life that God had for me to walk into, not my things, my visions, my dreams, but that. And I'd say the other word would be home. This is home for us, for our family, for me growing up and being raised here. And so those would be the words I'd pick.
Good. You want to follow up on that with them? Tell them what they mean to you, sons or not.
Okay.
Do the emotional part. Well, yeah, just what they mean to me as sons and daughters. But really, I mean, it's amazing to me just the gift that God has given putting us together. It's not, like you said, it's not always easy, but forgiveness and trust. I think trust is something that we have really developed. I have total trust that you guys have always had our back. Yes. You've always been there for us. You've been faithful. We have open conversations. There's not hidden things or hidden agendas. And so I think it's been really neat to see how, you know, like when we go to the national conferences and things like that, we've been proponents of taking our team with us. And oftentimes we get there and pastors have not made the sacrifice. Churches have not given generous financially to take their teams. And they come back with so much when you take them, that would take years for discipleship. And so I think that's been something that has bonded us, is that we would get a house and we'd stay together, play games, be crazy, have fun. I mean, we truly, I would say, love to be together. We're all different. We're all quirky in our own ways. But if you don't like each other and you're on a team together, that's a miserable existence. And we determined a long time ago that we would have people that we're going to work with. There's lots of gifted people that would even love to work with us. But we wanted people that we are like-minded, our chemistry matched, our vision and our values matched. And it's work, but it's so worth it when you really are fluid together.
We've all been to Cuba together multiple times, Dominican Republic together. We've been to Africa multiple times. Together, we've traveled all over the U.S. ministered, and we've climbed mountains together. We've whitewater rafted together.
I should have brought that picture.
You should have. Yeah, that would have been with us in the rubber. The wetsuit.
We've left some people behind on the mountains once.
Oh, money right there. All of them in a black wetsuit.
All of them in the wetsuit. How about me in the wetsuit? That wasn't. This body's not made for a wetsuit. Let me help you. So I don't want to make it sound like it's all been romance and bliss, because I love what Jesus said to his disciples as he's getting ready to go to the cross. He's had communion. Judas is about ready to betray him. In Luke chapter 22, he says this is one of the biggest compliments he ever makes to anybody in the New Testament. Luke 22, are we on that? He says, "You are those who have stood by me in my trials." I mean, that they're not like superstars, not smartest people in the world. They're fishermen, they're regular people. They've been loyal. They've been faithful. And the only way you know if somebody can be loyal and faithful is to a test, a trial. And as you know, in church life, every church goes through trials and tests, and every church went through the COVID trial. You know, we stewarded it differently than others. Doesn't make us better, wrong. But I pulled our staff together, and I said, if the bag boy at Publix is bagging groceries, we're going to work. We're going to work. And they were like, okay. And I said, if you don't have peace about it, you don't have to come. But we're going to be wise. We distance. We did parking lot church. But that's just part of our, we took risks together. But when my wife and I went through a hard time in our marriage, they had our backs. A lot of them, we had others that stabbed us in the back. When you're down, you know it brings out the best and the worst. And we had, you know, we've had our share of that. They have. They've lost friends from becoming loyal to Kim and I. They've lost friends. And I, you know, it's painful. But why would you do that? I mean, it's not because we pay you that much. I know that. What is it that causes you to want to stay faithful to this, obviously to Jesus, but to this church and to us? What is it that provokes that in you when it costs you, when your friends are involved and pain's involved and people are saying, but why would you do that?
Yeah, I think, you know, specifically for us, Carrie and I, my wife and our family, and that season where we had some staff who left the church and took with them pretty much our whole friend group of our generation and everything. And I remember on whatever day it was, I was taking my son to the dentist and all of this stuff is blowing up around us, and you called me. He said, hey, I just need to know, are you with us? I said, yeah, we're not going anywhere. This is where God has called us to be. Amen. You are who God has called us to be with. And being part of a church, and UIO, we talk about this with discovering your church family. Like, it's much more than just, well, I like the music there. Or I'm going to go to that church because they have free breakfast and, like, that's cool. No, it's this is the group of people, the community that God has called me and my family to do life with. Amen. And so it doesn't matter what else is going on. It doesn't matter if somebody's got better music or whatever, if somebody's upset or anxious about something. We're going to work through it because God's called us to be together as a community, as a group, as a family, as a team. And so let's deal with the mess.
For me, it was a little more family-minded, because when you know somebody for a long time, you watch them go through ups and downs. And so my response in that situation was, I knew them before this, I knew them during this, and I'll know them after you're gone.
Amen.
And that history, you don't put people in a box in a window of their life. You watch their whole life, and you watch how God works in their life. And you want to be a part of a church that gets that you have flaws, that gets that you need mercy, that gets to be able to, and that's where we all get to play. Because if it was about being perfect and it was about having your act together, there'd be empty chairs in this room and there'd be nobody on the stage. But they've given that to me, and how could I not give that back to them?
And for me, obviously, I've had the most time with them. So it's one of the most hurtful things to have people come at your family or, you know, say negative things about people that you know to your core who they are. So I get a little defensive and, you know, got to watch that. So, but really, I've seen them at home, where you guys don't go home with them. I have lived at home with them. I know the genuineness in their heart and they've sacrificed everything for this church. So to see people come at sometimes can be, you know.
It reminds me of the proverb, put that up, if you would, 25:19. I learned it opposite. I learned it that confidence in an unfaithful person is like having, in the middle of a trial, is like having a broken tooth or a broken ankle. I mean, if you ever had a broken tooth and you try to eat with a broken tooth, you're going hungry. And if you've ever broke your ankle or sprained your ankle, and you don't know, and that's where life, marriage, life, jobs, friendship, you're going to go through fire. And it's in that fire you're going to learn good things about yourself, and you're going to learn bad things about yourself. And so faithfulness isn't about being perfect. Paul said, commit to and trust to faithful people. They're faithful, not that they never messed up, not that they've never been weak or failed, but because God has never let go of them. They've never let go of God, and they've hung on in those hard times. That's who you want to go to a fight with. You don't want to go to a fight with someone that you're not sure if they're going to jump on the other side and jump in on you. You want to know they got your back. The only way to know that is to pass tests. And we don't give tests out to people to try to make them fail. We want people to grow, and we give grace to fail. I said something to a newer couple last week, and I'd said something a month ago about Alpha. I said, you ought to go to Alpha. And that's all I said. And he followed up. He said, you know, what's this Alpha thing you were telling me about? Now, see, I jumped right in both feet. His stock just went up on my book because he paid attention to what we recommended, and he's doing something with it. That's how all of these got to where they are. I mean, it's Jason crawling on his hands and knees in the men's bathroom after someone did a terrorist act in there and locked the door. Locked the door. So he had to crawl in the terrorist act, clean the stall out, and he didn't have a hazmat suit on. I would have thrown up three times, got a hazmat suit, and got a flamethrower, and I'd have burned the whole bathroom down. And then I would have told everybody about it in a sermon series for 5 weeks. He never mentioned it to anybody. Someone else told me, you know what Jason did today? I can tell stories about each of them that do things that you'll never see. The hard work of faithfulness, of not, I didn't, that's not what I signed up for. Now, how have you found your challenges giving away what you've been given? Now, we have a whole bench underneath them that their generation, they're giving to, that has a bench under them. That's how we train. If we see anybody in this church that's serving, not building a team, we love on them. We say there's more in you than what you're doing. Richie, stuck in that kitchen, did all the cooking himself and does an amazing job. It took us how many years, Richie? 6 years to crack the code that you need a team. Because if something happens to Richie, he can't hold up his hand right now, but you would know, arm surgery, can't cook. Well, he'd still cook better with one hand than I could cook. But he raised up Jericho and a whole team around him. Now he's able to move up to the next stage. Not that it's more important, just different. He does all our production work up here, and because he's multiplied himself. That's what we're trying to say to you in the kingdom. If you just suck in and don't give back out, you're not giving away what God. That's why Paul says, find faithful people. Not just people that are going to do what they say, but people are going to take what you say and give it to others and more than others. So what have you guys discovered in your, you start, honey, because in your journey, you've had, you've been great at giving away. What have been, you
know? Yeah, I would say for me as a younger leader, you know, coming up, I didn't have a lot of gifts and strengths and talents and a lot of boldness and courage. And so as I began to step in leadership with the Lord and I began to try on some of these things and walk in some of these things, I actually really loved it and I loved what I did. But I had a poverty mentality. And a poverty mentality says, if I give this up to somebody else...
Like, think of a pie. If I give someone a piece of pie, then there's less pie for me.
There's less for me. I won't have anything to do for God. I won't be able to be a leader. I won't be able to do the things that I want to do for God. And so, especially when you love and you're passionate about an area. But the Lord challenged me early on that... That's part of the kingdom. That's part of when I give it away, that doesn't make me less of a leader. That makes me more of a leader. And so as I began to see that and began to see and look at people that were doing things that I started out early on and developed the 3-year-old department when we didn't have it. And so there's just been, but everything you do, you love, and then you find that person that can do it better than you. That's what I really started looking for. I would have different things I did, but it was like, well, that person really could do this better than me.
Well, and I push back. Not necessarily better, but different. Yeah. And now there's more of you.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So it's not,
yeah.
Not
so you're,
that
you're multiplying. And I think in Genesis, I believe it's 9, chapter 9 or something, but where God talks about he sends us out to be fruitful and to multiply. And that fruitfulness and multiplying can be, and of course, having children and life and family, but it applies in ministry. It applies when we're fruitful or when we multiply and we're fruitful. God just keeps giving and building into others' lives. And you keep getting more responsibility because God says, I see your faithfulness. I see you're trusting me. I see you're taking risk. And so those are great things to learn in the kingdom.
So what have you guys? What are your challenges been?
I would lean into the prayer. You know, God gave me, had this moment for me in the history of me being here that he challenged me to pray for others that would, and I know you're taking that word, be better. But for me, I didn't know if I really wanted anybody better than I was. Because I didn't know how to lead them, and then I just did everything on my own. But that was a very narrow-minded view of ministry, and you're not going to grow your ministry very much. You're not going to see other people come in, and the pressure and the weight would always be on me. And so, when the Lord gave me that little nugget of, I started praying for people that were better than me. Lord, will you send people that I need to learn how to lead? That I need to become more organized to lead.
Make you get up earlier.
Make me get up earlier. And then he started.
That name would be Pastor Terry. Did he come back in? He didn't come back in with
it. He's in middle school.
He's in middle school. But Charles took over. We had nobody, our youth leader, quit. Left us. And as well as our worship leader and our children's leader. How'd you like to lose your children's department, most of your worship department, and all of your youth department? Wow. They all left. In one swoop. And we're like, I want to do something else. I've dreamed of mowing grass for a living. I know you can't appreciate it, CT, but if that lawnmower gave me crap, I could get a screwdriver and stab it, and I'd be done with it. I'll go get another mower. But you got to be nice to people, and that's not easy for my personality. So,
Terry,
so Charles steps in to do youth. I'm like, dude, you used to do it, but you're old now, man. And this has been a few years ago. I said, you're old. He said, I can do it. So he's third and long, steps in. He stewards the youth, and it wasn't much to build with. And he just kept praying and praying and praying and praying for someone better. And God brought Terry and Natasha back that grew up in our church. Where they went out, came back. He's now taken over. Charles gives him oversight. And they're doing a fantastic job building on the foundation Charles made. But now they're doing a great job. And so, Kelly, what's your challenge has been with?
Probably perfectionism, because I'm pretty, you know, how I like things done and how I like, you know. And when you let other people in, you have to be willing to say it's not going to be how I want it done necessarily. I can speak in and I can lead, but they're, you know, they're going to do things their way. And, you know, the messes that come with it in between, you just have to grow through that and work together. But I love being part of a team. I don't want to do things alone. So for me, I'm very social and I love to be, you know, with other people. So for me, the more that are with me helping and doing stuff, the more fun it is. So.
But we also are fluid. Like, you're not in children's ministry, but if Jamie's got a problem there with the worship, you're stepping in. You're working with the worship and Nova with the youth. You're stepping in. Same with Jason and Charles. We're fluid. You know, if someone comes here like a worship person and says, I play the lead guitar, literally have had this happen. I'm a lead guitar player. And then we say, well, we don't need a lead guitar player right now. I need someone on the soundboard. Oh, no. I don't. I know how to do it. I'm not doing soundboard. You know why? Nobody sees the soundboard back there. They're like linemen in the NFL. The only time you recognize them is when they screw up. And it's like, no, it's too loud. It's change that. Just that's when they get recognition. But no, you're up here on the stage. We want team players. So where am I needed? I maybe not be great at that. Richie started washing dishes in the kitchen. And he's a chef, trained professional chef. We didn't know that. but he was washing dishes. That's in the vineyard, faithfulness and little things. Make God important. We told our volunteers this morning we have a team meeting. We probably have, how many? I don't know. Over.
There was at least 50 without the staff. So
50 without staff that we meet. We have a five-minute just get together, and then we say, ring that bell on three. One, two, three. Ring that bell. But these are all volunteers. They don't have to be here. They choose to get to be here. They want to be here. And that's how the vineyard operates. And so I appreciate a church that's mothers and fathers here that are older, like us, that make room for the messes of not necessarily this group, but what this group used to be, but the group under them.
We made our own messes.
You made plenty of messes. But, you know, but Jason, what do you want to add to that, the challenges?
The challenges are that the Lord works in seasons, and things that he gives to us for a season might not be what we'll ultimately always carry and hold. And if you give yourself fully to what God's given you in that season, it gets really difficult when that changes. And that's okay. That's the Lord moving to do something different. They had to, when I shifted, the first thing I did here was I came on staff real part-time to help with high school. And then eventually I had to shift over to middle school. And I didn't want to because I didn't want to be around middle schoolers. I wanted to be with the high schoolers. And that was, but it was what the Lord had for me. So I had to say, all right, I'll be flexible.
Literally, he's making it sound nice. We drug him in there, kicking and screaming, and say, you're going to do middle school. I'm serious. There were screeches in the concrete were his fingernails. And yet, if you'd have seen him back then, he was into this thing of patches and things all over his clothes, and his hair's all different colors, and he looked like a middle schooler. I mean, he fit right in. So he goes in there and he does an amazing job of the middle school. Go ahead.
No, carry on.
And because of that, we moved him because we needed him somewhere else. Now he's crying.
Because he fell in love with the middle school.
Yeah. He's literally crying on me. I'm like, you're crying. He didn't want to, but he loved what he was doing. And the mean past moved me into something I don't want to do. And then he fell in love with doing that. And then we moved him out of that. And then the only outside hire that we've done, part-time bookkeeper, didn't have the common sense to pay payroll tax. I get three armed IRS officers at the door. I thought someone was messing with me, playing a joke. The lady opens her thing, shows me her badge and her gun. We're coming to take your books. I'm like, oh my God. So obviously we fired her, and we looked around the room and thought, I'm terrible at math, and I'll just...
I'm worse.
And Charles will give all the money away. He says, oh, you know, you're crying. Here, take this check, please. Here, no,
you take can't feed
car.
A family on
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah. Come on. That's a, he's just generous hearted. And Kelly had her own thing. And so we looked around, we looked at Jason, he's like, I don't know anything about it. I said, but you're smarter than us. You're now in charge. And we put, how old would you have been back then?
Probably 22.
Back then, we didn't have $1 million-plus budget like we do now, but we probably had $500,000. And we just said, we'll train you. You're smart enough to figure this out. We hired a CPA. We got people around him, and we threw him in the deep end. And now he's not screaming, kicking. He's drowning because it's like, I didn't go to Bible school for this. This isn't what I dreamed of doing, being shut up in a room with a whatever you call the bookkeeping...
QuickBooks,
and shut up in QuickBooks. And, but he did it. You would have thought that Kim and I said, here's a great strategy. We're going to drag this young kid through every type of ministry. We're going to give him every trial, every test, because he's going to become our executive pastor, and an executive needs to know everything there is about the church. And guess what? He's our executive pastor. But it wasn't our plan. I mean, I wish I was that smart, but our plan was for all of them and all of you to be everything God has called you to be. We don't, we're not, they're not our employees. Yes, they work for us, but we are family. And we have spiritual accountability. We're not just yuck, yuck, do whatever you want to do. We have hard conversations. We have conflict we work through. But we're family. But they've been willing to do what God put in front of them. Jesus says, eat what's set before you. There's a lot in that. Are faithful and little, and I'll give you more. You clean up the toilet, you might get to go to the urinal next. I mean, you get, there's, but this, I'm not trying to fault younger. I'm challenging you. Younger generation needs to learn. You don't get to just parachute in, skip all those hard lessons, and now let me be at this phase where it took my parents 50 years to get here. I'm going to be here by the time I'm 25. No, it's a journey. There's failures and heartaches, and stay with your job. Don't, if I lose my mind with my grandkids, you don't quit your job unless you have a better job. Okay, there's just a rule. Well, I don't like my job. Oh, well, I don't like my job at times. There's times I'm like, I'm not going to church today. And my wife says, you have to go. Why? Because you're the pastor. It's your job. Get out of bed, you big baby. So, but you can believe for a better job, but God promotes out of when they've never fought to get something else and been envious of others, and they've modeled servanthood, and that's why they got promoted, and that's why they're investing in others. Yeah. And Kelly, give them that, what you talked about giving the yes. I thought that's a great...
Yeah, when I came back into church, I was... you know, serving and singing some harmonies and stuff, and I wanted more. I felt God had put more on me. I felt God had called me to be a leader. Specifically, even back then, we didn't really even have women leading worship much, especially without an instrument, you know, so I had some hurdles, but I felt like God was like, can I have your yes? And I didn't know at the moment what it was going to be too, but I committed to God that I will say yes at anything that you put in front of me. Anything that you give to me or an ask, I'm going to commit my yes now before I know what that is. So when those things came, even though some of them were, I was maybe not where I wanted to do or reluctant to do, I knew I'd already committed to God that he had my yes. So I was able to step into things that maybe I was insecure or not confident or, you know, those kind of situations where I go, I've already given God my yes. He's already been faithful to see me through and all the other things I've said yes to. And so I'm going to continue in that.
And now she oversees in our region. She's our regional worship leader, overseeing 60 plus other worship leaders in our region. And so...
And nine here.
Say it again.
And nine worship leaders.
And that's a great point. Yeah. When we talk about giving to faithful people, you saw Will and Diane helping lead worship this morning. They're volunteers. They've been raised up by Kelly. She's poured into them. They've been faithful. But she's got eight other or seven other people. Most churches, I've had churches way larger than us say, hey, you know any worship leaders out there? I'm like, don't you have one? Well, we have one, but whatever happened, they left or whatever, blah, blah, blah. We don't, and that worship leader doesn't have a backup. They're not raising anybody up. That's number one here. Number one, you don't have a backup so that if you go down, if you get called to be the chaplain for the next president, you know, and God, who would want that job anyway? But can you imagine sitting there, whichever one, and they say, what do you think we ought to do? And I'd be like, I have no idea what you ought to do. Watch all the people on the news. They know what you ought to do, but I have no idea. Let's just go to Jesus. Let's cry out to God. That's what our country needs. But anyway, back. Okay. So, gone. Lost. Gone. Anyway, what was I saying? I have no idea.
Raising up other people in your areas.
Okay, go ahead. You guys want to add to that? Raising up other... It's... It's messy, like being a parent. You dream for your children to be better than you. I love a church like you that allow, we're not just preaching young. We've been through that phase. We went through the phase where we were all young leaders, except Kim and I. Not healthy. And God fixed it. Took them all away, except for a couple left behind. And now we had to get a healthier blend. So balance is hard to find in the kingdom.
And I think we had to grow during that season, too, because there was a big push in the vineyard and all the books and everything you read. And it's the young people, get out of the way for the young people. And what we did is we bowed down so far that we lost who we really were and what we really are about and what God called us to be about. And that just wasn't healthy for our souls. We had to come back into the mantle that God had put on our shoulders and then embrace the older, the middle-aged, the young, the very young. And I love that it's all, everybody's fluid together. We're not segmented apart from each other. We work together. Like you went out to the food truck. What was that?
Well, I mean, we had, six people in the truck. I had four people outside the truck. I've got generations in the truck. I've got Keith he's the only guy tall enough to get anything out of the truck, but he's handing food to everybody. And I've got Abdiel and Matthew and my son Dominic. They're inside. They're all working together. And they're just, just a team that made all that happen. If it was just me, I couldn't go do that.
But the generational piece was what was so neat. It's like nobody's saying, I'm not going to work with those kids, or I don't want to work with the older people, And so it's just so neat how it just came together, and that's how we do a lot of life in this church.
We train the principle of honor, and they honor us. Not that we always deserve it. They just honor us. They honor Kim, which, as she emerged as a co-pastor with me, it's just been awesome. But we train that. We don't want a young church only. Somebody may want that, but we want a generational church. And we need the wisdom of the elders. We need the maturity of the elders. We need the elders that'll be Ananias to the younger leaders, to believe in them, encourage them, let them fail and help them get back up. I think of the people that I was 22 when I started pastoring. Those people are pretty much all in heaven now. And I regularly go through it, and I thank God for them. I wouldn't have come to the church if I was me now and had that 22-year-old punk thought he knew everything about everything up there. I mean, how did they survive?
And I was hiding in the back, not wanting to come out and shake hands with people because these were all entrepreneurs and wealthy, and they had 3 or 4 houses and worked at Goldman Sachs. And, I would have been very comfortable with some hippies and some down-and-outers and druggies. Well, let's talk. We can go there.
Her first Sunday school class that she taught, she stayed up all night getting ready.
4 in the morning.
And then she taught, and she went 10 minutes. The class was 45, and she looked at me, and she said, I'm done.
And then I proceeded to go home, and I had, what is it called, where you have the panic, hyperventilated.
Our neighbor was a fire chief.
Fire chief had to come down, and I was passed out and drawn up. And
I thought
it was
she
like,
died on me.
I was
she
like,
collapsed.
I'll never do
Sunday
that again.
Sunday school killed her. And it's like, so he opens his bag of pharmaceuticals, and he gets a paper bag, and he holds it over her and says, breathe in and out, in and out. And all of a sudden, she revived like a Lazarus miracle. She stood up. So it's like, I'll never do Sunday school again. Now she preaches. So, don't tell God what you won't do.
Well, it's that thing of taking risk. It's that thing of trusting him. Now, I was thrown into the lion's den before my time, I think, in that situation. But that taking risk, the Lord has shown me that following him has been one of the greatest journeys I could ever experience, because he has met me every step of the way. And he's asked me to do things that I never wanted to do. I never wanted to go to the mission field, go to Africa, stay in some really rough places, be insecure, be away from my family. But he has been so there in his presence in everything he's asked me to do. So it's like Kelly said, I gave him my yes also. And so he has been there every step of the way, just one risk after another. And you think, okay, this is as far. I'm drawing the line in the sand. You know, he's not going to ask me to do, well, yeah, come to find out, that might be what I have to do too. And so these are things that you learn in the kingdom.
Not crawling under the commode, though. That's 1-800-JASON.
No, okay. I'm not going to.
Last.
I would.
Give me something you want, whatever you want to say, your last comments here. And it doesn't matter what order. What do you want to say to the church?
I'll start. Ask them to put a picture up, because this will summarize it in a simple picture. And this is our last fam jam we had. They'll put it up in a second. I don't know. But my daughter, Kelly, invited her onto the stage to lead worship with us. And for me to be able...
And how old is she?
She's 10 years old, and she's right over there. And she's like, please don't call me up on the stage. But she came up on the stage, and she sang with me. And and it made me go, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, to give away for this next generation, that they could have a moment where this could be their church. This could be her church.
It is her church.
And it is her church. And she led worship, and I'll treasure that. But we want to give.
If you hadn't have fought those battles that you fought in your life, buddy, if you hadn't have done the hard work that you've had to do in your soul and blazing a trail, not only for Dominic was in the food truck with
he's
you.
Playing bass.
You
know, he's playing bass. He's playing guitar here. This morning,
and
right over here.
You know, it's, go ahead, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just commend you for your hard work.
Just, yeah, I mean, it's that's why in this generation, we're looking back to the next generation, and we want to give away for you, that you can, you know, I don't know who's going to be on this stage 30 years from now.
How about 10?
You know, even 10, you know, just, but we want to give it away. And that's why we're sharing these stories for you. Not that we want to hoard it to our, because we want to give it away. I want to have a church she loves to go to and that she can belong and be a part of. And so.
Yeah, we're fighting the hard work. We want our children. They may not go to the Vineyard, but we want a Vineyard here that's like this. This is where I would recommend anybody to come, because I love this church. There's other great churches, Cape Coral, but they're not Vineyard. It's a different flavor, and you have to learn that. That's part of growing in a church, whatever age you come in here at. And we always tell the story in 101 or our UIO about, move on, I'm not going to tell it. All right, halfway through it, it torments people to not tell it. I become more ADD over the years, I think, than he is. Anyway, this leader had a vision of a glass of wine with a grape floating in it. And he said, Lord, what's that grape doing? And the one, he said, that's this certain leader. They're in your church, but they've never been crushed and become part of the wine. These people have been crushed. If you cut them, they bleed Vineyard. That's not cultic. That's just their DNA. It's their core of who they are. And it's that way with our team. And that's who we just added a new council member to the church. And our number one priority, other than obviously they love Jesus, but do they love this church? And it was like 100%. Second question was, do they love us? Oh, you only want yes people. If you know our council, they're not yes people.
No, but
they love us. And we don't have anybody on the team that we don't like hanging around. You don't get on the team if we don't like hanging around you. Say, oh, that's awful. No, life's too short to do hard work with people you don't like. It's just too hard when you get to pick. Now, you and your job, you may not get to pick. When you get to be the boss, you get to pick. And if you don't like the people around you, you picked them. So you got to deal with it. So they're with us because we like, you know, we like going mountain climbing together and whitewater rafting and who know what else we've done. I don't know. We've done a horseback riding and playing games so loud that Charles comes out because his wife's
beep, 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 beep.
Go to bed. And, things that happen, they stay there most of the time. All right.
They all laughed at me.
Okay.
That's
you
how
said your last.
They took me.
All right, Kelly, you say yours, then Jason.
Nothing is harder than investing in people and then watching them leave or blow up their life, mostly and a negative on them personally, which is really challenging, but makes it all worth it just watching the people that are growing and, you know, the youth that are coming along and just, you know, people that you're investing in, that you watching, you go, God has his hand on their life and they are going to do amazing things. So it makes it all worth it.
Yeah. Good, Jason.
In a similar vein, I would say that we are better together. That's what helps us grow, is by being in community, by being around people who challenge us, maybe, you know, say no to us, call us out on things, but that help us grow to become all that God has called us to be. And you can't get there on your own. You can't get there by just being your own individual person. You need others around you that will help you grow, that will challenge you, that will support you, that will believe in you and call out the things that they see for you when you don't. And that's what they've always done with all of us. And that's how we get to walk into all that the Lord has for us in the kingdom, is because we're better together.
All right, let's all stand up. Here's what we thought we'd do. I want, if you're 29, now if you're married to someone that's 30 or 31, whatever, we're not going to check your birth certificate. But 29 and under, married or not, down to, you know, whatever, if you can walk as a child, we'd like you to come to the front. We're going to pray a blessing on you for this. You're the third generation. If they're the second, you're 29 and under. Come on, all the way over here. How you feeling, man? You good? You back? Asher's been back from his missions trip. He's a great exhibit. You know, his grandpa was in the church. His dad's in the church. He's in the church. When he gets married, you're coming back. No, I'm just, you go wherever God sends you. Come on. Come on. Come on. Some of you are under 30 and you're not coming up. Come on. Come on. Mama made them. That's all right. Pastor Kim used to come to church with a rod sticking out of her pocketbook this big when our kids were little. And she bore the rod. And they were the only children in the church. Can you imagine there was one other child? And they had to grow up. They didn't have Vineyard Music. They had to sing old hymns with an organ. You may say, oh, I love those old hymns. Young people don't. Let me just help you. And we're not going to do them here. You can ask me for it all day long. I can even ask for it and they won't do them here. So, but we don't accommodate by changing our theology. I get it that the younger generation most of them would love us to be affirming and just accept any lifestyle that's out there, just because it feels good. And that's not who we are. That's not who we raised these next group of leaders either. We're not going to budge on the gospel. But we're going to be kind and gracious and welcoming, and we want to challenge this. This is our hope. If you watch the news and you think our hope lies in either one of those people, Lord, help us, Jesus. It's going to take a move of God in this country with these young people, you know, for them to realize that they've been sold a bill of goods, a bunch of lies about what's life about, what's happiness, and as though you can be good without God. You don't need the church. You don't need the Bible. You don't need God. We're better than that.
We have a higher morality than even God does.
We love more
greater
people than
compassion
God does.
Than even God.
And we just need God to move on this. This is you guys. You're our future leaders, pastors, worship leaders, school teachers, doctors, lawyers, police officers, firefighters, moms, dads. Come on. Let's pray for them, church. Come on. Let's ask the Holy Spirit to come on them.